The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, we're getting a late start today. I actually ended up going to Six Flags in San Antonio today with my brother, so starting a little later than usual today, but definitely was going to knock out a podcast regardless. I also wanted to give a little shout out to some of my new Canadian fans. I don't know what's been going on, like the last, I want to say like 2 weeks. I've been, the Canadian fans have really been growing, and all over Canada too. I've been seeing Alberta and British Columbia and I can't remember, Calgary. I've had quite a few Canadian fans joining us. So I don't know, am I going to have to start talking hockey? I'm not really well versed on hockey like I am everything else, but I don't know, maybe come playoff time I might have to start talking some hockey just because the Canadian fans are growing. So shout out to all of you for listening to me, as well as anybody else who's been listening to me. I really appreciate that, that you're checking me out and staying along for the ride. Yeah, let's just get right into it. Let's just start talking about the NBA playoffs. We had some crazy play-in games this week. They do call them play-in games. They're not technically the playoffs, but I'm not going to lie. Especially the first two games that we had, man, those were crazy games. But so it started out with Minnesota versus the Clippers in the Western Conference. Minnesota got the win against the Clippers 109-104, and the Minnesota Timberwolves acted like they just won the championship when they beat the Clippers. It was the craziest reaction to a play-in game. I mean, hey, I'm glad they were excited that they got the win, but it was really odd to see motherfuckers jumping on tables and like crying and like, go home, motherfucker, and all that kind of crap. I'm like, dude, y'all just made the playoffs, and sorry about you, but you got to face Memphis in the first round. So I hope they didn't waste all their excitement in that one game. But I mean, it was a crazy game too. The Timberwolves did make a great comeback, and they were even able to have a good game. And Karl Anthony Towns, he basically had a disappearing act during this game. He just was not able to knock down anything. He just was having that bad game that happens to every great player. Just on occasions, you just have a really bad game, and that was a really bad game for Karl Anthony Towns. But the rest of his team really stepped it up, and they ended up getting the win, and now they have moved on to the first round of the NBA playoffs, and we'll see what we get in that round. Then in the Eastern Conference, the first play-in game was the Brooklyn Nets versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. Brooklyn ended up just absolutely, it was kind of close a little bit, but it was mostly Brooklyn just pretty much dominated Cleveland from start to finish. It ended up being 115-108, and so Brooklyn has now moved on to the first round of the NBA playoffs. Then the second game in the Western Conference play-in was the New Orleans Pelicans against San Antonio Spurs, and basically the Pelicans just dominated the Spurs from start to finish. The final score ended up being 113-103. I think it was that score doesn't indicate about how much of an ass kicking it was. San Antonio was not, it just, they weren't in the game at all from at any point. And it's also looking like it's very possible that this, we could be looking at the end of the Greg Popovich era. He hasn't stated whether or not he's going to retire or stay, but honestly, I think we're headed that direction regardless. Even if he sticks around for another year, I just kind of feel like he's going to be headed out any day now, just because, you know, he's been in the game for a while. The Spurs haven't been good since Tim Duncan retired. I mean, Pop's getting old, and that's just the way it goes. And, you know, he's got a great legacy. You know, I've already discussed what respect I have for him. And, you know, I think he's one of the greatest coaches of all time. But he just hasn't been able to get the Spurs back to where they used to be. And so I wouldn't be shocked if we end up seeing him retire this offseason, but I also wouldn't be shocked to see him stick around for at least one more year with the Spurs. Then the second game in the play-in was in the Eastern Conference was the Atlanta Hawks versus the Charlotte Hornets, and the Hawks just dominated the Charlotte Hornets from start to finish. Ended up being a 132-103 final score. So that right there just lets you know, I mean, Atlanta just took off and absolutely dominated. So then the final two play-in games, which are going on right now, Atlanta versus Cleveland is on my TV right now. It's on a commercial break, so I don't see what the score is. But I know they were going into half, and it looked like Cleveland kind of had at least an 8-point lead or something like that. So I'm not really sure what's going on. Haven't really checked out the game, but I actually have Atlanta winning this game just because I think the Atlanta Hawks are overall a very good team. Trae Young's just been playing great. But you can't really count the Cavaliers out. They've got a really young, solid core. And I think the Cavaliers could end up being a team. They're like one really good player away. They kind of remind me of the Phoenix Suns before they got Chris Paul, where they had they got a young squad full of talented players, and they just aren't able to put it together yet. And that's what I think Cleveland's missing, just that one star. Maybe next year they might trade for somebody like a Damian Lillard. I think they could use definitely some type of veteran presence. But in this matchup, I do have Atlanta. But like I said, it looks like right now that Cleveland's leading at halftime. And then the Western Conference, the last play-in game is going to be the New Orleans Pelicans versus the LA Clippers. Paul George is not going to be playing tonight. So I actually had New Orleans winning this game even before I found that out, but now I'm even more sold on New Orleans, especially the way they played against the Spurs. Like, they absolutely annihilated the Spurs. And while the Clippers aren't as bad as the Spurs, they're not really a good team, and the Pelicans are actually playing really good basketball at this current point in time. So I've got the New Orleans Pelicans moving on. So let me go ahead and make my first round predictions, because that starts tomorrow. I'll go ahead and start off with the whoever wins the play-in tonight from the Pelicans versus Clippers game, they get to start off versus the Phoenix Suns. And I don't think, to me, it doesn't matter whether they play the Pelicans or the Clippers. I think Phoenix is going to absolutely dominate whoever it is they end up playing. And I actually think it's going to be a very quick series where they're going to win in four. I think it's going to be an easy sweep because the Phoenix Suns have just been that good. And while they tend to start choking come playoff time, I don't think now would be the time they would choke. So I've got Phoenix moving on in the first round easy with a sweep, whoever they play, whether it's the Pelicans or the Clippers. Then you've got the Minnesota Timberwolves versus the Memphis Grizzlies. I also think this is going to be a very quick series, just because Memphis is a complete team. They have Ja Morant, who's had a phenomenal season, but he's had to battle through some injuries this year, and he's missed some time. But even so, the Grizzlies have been able to maintain without him. And I just think they're too good of a team for the Timberwolves to even compete against. And in the last Timberwolves game with them getting all excited over beating the crap out of the Clippers in a play-in game, I kind of feel like you're blowing your wad right there before anything even starts. So I don't think they have a chance against the Grizzlies, and I think the Grizzlies will take care of the Minnesota Timberwolves easily. And I'll give the Timberwolves one game in this one, but overall I think the Grizzlies are going to win this series in five. Then moving on to the Denver Nuggets versus the Golden State Warriors. It looks like Steph Curry is going to be playing game one, which is great news for the Golden State Warriors, because I don't think they have a shot in hell at anything without Steph Curry. While they're a good team without him, they need the star power of Steph Curry. And then when you look over at the Denver Nuggets, they're not that great of a team. They're pretty much just Nikola Jokic, and that's about it. Now, Jokic has had an amazing season, but I don't think that Denver has the bench to compete with the Golden State Warriors. I just think not only are the Warriors deeper as a team, but they also had the veteran presence. They've been here. They've won championships. They know how to win in the playoffs. So I've got Golden State moving on in this series in six games. Then what I'm calling the wild card Western Conference first round matchup is the Utah Jazz versus the Dallas Mavericks. And the reason why it's a wild card, in my opinion, is because we don't actually know what we're going to get out of Luka Doncic in this series. And that's because he hurt his calf in the last game of the season. He's got a strained calf, and it's looking like he's going to miss game one at least. And there's a possibility he could miss more. And if that's the case, I don't think the Mavericks have a chance because they're pretty much the team runs through Luka Doncic. He's such a great player. He's so fun to watch. But if he's out, that team has no shot. But my prediction, I'm going to go off of him only missing one game. I kind of see him at least attempting to try and play in game two, if anything. With that being said, I was taking Dallas if he was healthy. I already had them as my pick at that point in time before he got injured. And the Jazz, and it's just because the Jazz, they're not really playing great team ball. They do have some great players in Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, but they don't mesh that well. They don't have the same type of personalities where they like each other at all. And I think that kind of has been showing on the court. The Jazz just don't play that great of team basketball. They have a lot of talent. And like I said, if Luka's not playing, then I think they've got a shot at winning this series. But if Luka plays and he plays at a high level, I think it would be a good series. I actually think this game will go seven, but I have Dallas winning in seven. And that all depends on if Luka plays. If Luka plays this series, that's what happens. But if he does not, then I think Utah will easily win this series in probably like five, maybe six games. But we'll see what happens. I'm going to stick with Dallas because that was my initial pick. And like I said, if Luka misses only one game, I don't think that's going to be that big of a deal. But it is a big deal if he ends up missing more than one game because seven-game series, you're going to need – you go down in a hole 0-2. It's not like you can't come back from that, but it's a much more difficult battle. Moving on to the Eastern Conference – In the play-in, whoever wins tonight's play-in between Atlanta and Cleveland will be going up against the Miami Heat. And whoever the Miami Heat play, I'm picking the Miami Heat. They're a good team. They've been one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference this season. They play great team basketball. They did have a little low moment for a couple weeks ago. But other than that, they've been able to pick it up. I don't know if I think they're a championship caliber team just yet. But I definitely think they're capable of beating either Atlanta or Cleveland. And I think it will be a decent series no matter who they play. I think it'll go six games, but I've got Miami winning in six games. Then moving on to Brooklyn Nets versus the Boston Celtics. This is going to be a good matchup, I believe. It's really good because the Nets right now, they're playing great basketball. You know, Kevin Durant is in playoff mode. And when Kevin Durant's in playoff mode, anything can happen. That dude is a beast come playoff time. And Kyrie Irving has just been playing great basketball. And so it's the way those two are playing right now, it's going to be a good series. But beyond those two, I don't think they have the firepower to keep up with the Boston Celtics. You know, Boston, they have Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Both of them are balling hard this season. But then once you get past them, it's like their bench is very deep. And I don't think they really have anybody to match up against Boston in the paint. So I think in a seven-game series, I'm going to go ahead and take Boston in this one. I think Boston will win this series in six games. But I think Brooklyn's definitely going to make it interesting. That's for sure. Then moving on to the Chicago Bulls versus the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis is in championship mode. You could just see it in his eyes. This dude's been on fire. Especially just heading into the playoffs, he has been on fire. And you could just see he's a man on a mission. And I don't think the Bulls have a shot in this one. The Bulls have been a good team this year, but the injuries have just killed them. And I don't think they have any shot at beating Milwaukee at all. I think they have a shot at maybe getting one win in this series, but I've got Milwaukee moving on in this series in five games. And then to round it out in the Eastern Conference, we got the Toronto Raptors versus the Philadelphia 76ers. And I actually think Philadelphia is going to move on easily. I think this is going to be a clean sweep. I think Philly wins in four games. Toronto's not a bad team. Not a bad team at all, but I don't think they have anything to compete with the way Joel Embiid's playing. He's just been playing at an MVP level from start to finish this year. And the 76ers, they just roll right through him. So I've got the Sixers winning that series in a sweep in four games. So that's how I got my first round predictions looking right now. I've got Phoenix, Memphis, Dallas, and Golden State moving on in the Western Conference. And then I've got Miami, Boston, Milwaukee, and Philadelphia moving on in the Eastern Conference. So we'll see what's going on come Monday's episode. But I think we got some good series coming up there. And it's just always great to see, you know, those play-in games. The first two, especially, they were close games, and they were actually competitive, unlike the last two. We'll see what happens with this NBA playoffs, and we'll see if Phoenix can go in there. Because if you don't recall, I made my predictions on Monday's show, and I have it coming down to Phoenix versus Milwaukee again, and I've got Phoenix winning it all. So we'll see what happens. Come June. Then moving on to the NFL, we have just a couple of things that happened this week. First of all, the Washington Commanders, the investigation continues on them, and it's looking more and more grim for the good old Commanders right now. It's looking like they were cooking the books. It sounds like they had two books that they were using for their sales. And basically, one of the accusations is that if you're trying to become a season ticket holder, for the majority of teams, especially for a team like the Commanders, they actually do have fans who have been fans for many years. So I'm sure they actually do have a waiting list, which I'm pretty sure every team, if the majority of teams for sure, have a waiting list for their season tickets. And usually when you get on the waiting list, you have to place a deposit. And then the deposit, you either get the deposit back or it goes towards your tickets. And in Washington, what they ended up doing is they never gave that deposit back to their season ticket holders. So, they're actually fucking their own fans over. And that's a big deal when you're cooking the books. There's a couple other things that came out as well, but that was the one thing that really stood out to me. And it's just looking more and more, man, that, I'm betting that Daniel Snyder is going to have to, he's not going to be the owner of the Washington Commanders, I think, in the next, I would say, year, especially after this investigation, because this isn't just like the last investigation. It was, quote, an independent investigation, so they didn't have to release any of the evidence, and any of the punishment came from all the NFL owners, which, I mean, we know that's not a real punishment. It's just rich people's punishment. And, you know, currently his wife is, quote, running the team. We all know that's a joke. My guess is that Daniel Snyder is not going to own the Commanders. By the time this investigation's over, he's definitely not going to own it. But I kind of have a feeling within the next year, we're going to see a changing of the guard, because Daniel Snyder, he's been a shit show his entire time he's owned the Redskins. I can't recall when he bought them. I want to say it was maybe like 99, 98. I know it was kind of late 90s when he bought them, but they've just been a shit show. Not just even with the players that they've drafted and then ruined, and then all the coaches they've run through, and then even just their own stadium. Like, it literally has sewage leaking through it. So it's been a shit show. And then you've got all these lawsuits that they've had going on, and all these sexual harassment lawsuits. And then all the emails and shit that came out, and now you got this. So it's been a shit show for you, Daniel Snyder, and I don't really see you owning a football team much longer. And quite frankly, it doesn't sound like you should be owning a football team, because you sound like an absolute dickwad. But hey, we'll see what else comes out. I'm sure there's plenty of more fun things to be reporting on the Washington Commanders, and I'm here for it, because we all know I hate that stupid fucking team. And then we also had a three-year extension given to Derek Carr, quarterback of the Las Vegas Raiders. He got a three-year extension for $121 million. This right here basically, I feel like, solidifies him to end his career as a Raider. He wants to end his career as a Raider. And honestly, I think this is very well deserved. You know, unlike people like Deshaun Watson, who gets his guaranteed contract, and you look at that and you're kind of like, oh, he gets to dangle his dick on people and then he gets $230 million guaranteed. Oh, awesome. At least Derek Carr is a decent human being. especially after this last year. You know, he could have said some fucked up shit about the team. He could have said some fucked up shit about Henry Ruggs, the guy who got in a drinking driving accident. No, this dude, he kept his cool all season long. He's a spectacular leader. And not only that, he's a damn good quarterback. So good for Derek Carr, definitely well-deserved. And now the Raiders are locked in with a quarterback, at least for the next 3 years. Speaking of quarterbacks, the Kyler Murray saga continues. It looks like his agent sent the Cardinals an extension offer. Oh, this is what we want. And basically the Cardinals declined it. And there's threats that Kyler Murray is going to sit out this season. Now, at this point, it's still just threats. We never know what's going to happen. Even come training camp time, lots of guys sit out for training camp and then they'll show up for the regular season. Kind of like what Aaron Rodgers did last year. So we'll see if Kyler Murray's just playing chicken or Cardinal in his case right now. I can't say that I disagree with what the Cardinals did. Because, I mean, really, Kyler Murray hasn't proven shit yet. He hasn't proven that he's a trash can quarterback. No, he's actually proven he's a pretty solid quarterback. But, I mean, we don't really know what to get from him. I mean, he hasn't shown anything in the postseason. He hasn't won them a Super Bowl. He hasn't shown that he's a true leader. I mean, like in the case of Derek Carr, who I was just talking about, yeah, he hasn't won any playoff games. He hasn't won any Super Bowls. But you could tell he's a leader. You could tell he likes to be there. He's very vocal. He never backs down in the face of adversity. Whereas Kyler actually has shown the opposite. He kind of gets a little, you could tell when his team's down that it's really difficult for him to become self-motivated. And that's not really what you want in your quarterback. And he just really hasn't proven anything yet. So I actually see why the Cardinals have not extended his contract yet. Who knows? They might. I actually don't think they will. I think they will ride it out this year and see what Kyler does. And we'll see if he ends up sitting out. But usually this kind of drama, it never bodes well. Even if he does end up not sitting out, even if he does go to training camp, this kind of drama lingers through the season. And I mean, look at what happened with the Green Bay Packers last year. Aaron Rodgers had his drama fight season. Yes, they dominated the regular season, but guess what happened? They laid an egg as soon as they hit the postseason. So we'll see what happens with the Kyler Murray saga. It continues. And we'll see if he holds out come training camp time. And then last in the NFL news, Stephon Gilmore, arguably the best cornerback who was out on the free agent market this year. He just signed today with the Indianapolis Colts. I think that's a great move for the Colts. Their defense was already one of the best in the league, and now they just added one of the best cornerbacks, hands down, in the league. So we'll see how that works out for them. But the Colts just made a great move right there by signing Gilmore. All right, now let's move on to baseball. If you don't know, today is Jackie Robinson Day, so happy Jackie Robinson Day to everybody. It's usually, they always pick a day of the year when Jackie Robinson, he broke the color barrier, and today is Jackie Robinson Day. Everybody wears the number 42. It's the only time of year anybody gets to wear the number 42 because it's retired, and so happy Jackie Robinson Day to everybody. Great baseball player, and from what I have read, seems like he was a very great human being as well. And a couple things that did happen in baseball this week: Clayton Kershaw, he threw for 7 scoreless innings, and the Dodgers ended up taking him out after 7 innings. It seemed to cause a great debate. In my opinion, I kind of feel like that debate's like over with because we've been pulling pitchers at least for the last 4 or 5 years. It's just been growing and growing and growing. It's just kind of what they do. And also Kershaw is an old pitcher now. He's still a solid pitcher, obviously. He's just threw 7 scoreless innings. I'm sure he could have gone on and scored and done a perfect game all the way through. But also at the same time, he's been battling through injuries over the last couple of seasons. You know, he's only on a 1-year deal with the Dodgers right now, and he's old. The old guys, they could get injured real easily, and he's a great pitcher. And usually when you're a great pitcher, the injuries come along as well, because just the violence of throwing a pitch, it takes your entire body. And so, I mean, him getting pulled, I really wasn't actually surprised. You know, you want to actually keep him in there to try and get the perfect game, but at the end of the day, he got pulled. That's what they do. We're lucky that we even have pitchers going seven innings. Lots of times they get pulled in the first or second inning. So that's just the way the game is these days. They don't like to see guys pitch for that long. We don't have Juan Marichals anymore who can pitch 16 innings like a beast. And then also, Vlad Guerrero Jr. had a 3-home-run game against the Yankees the other day. And so, yeah, that guy's already on a tear. The season has just begun, and Vlad Guerrero Jr. already making a case for MVP. And since it is Jackie Robinson Day, I decided I'm going to do two separate Trop 5 lists. The first Trop 5 list I'm going to do is the Trop 5 Negro League players, and then I'm going to do the Trop 5 what I call barrier breakers. And by the barrier breakers, I wanted to separate this out because if you don't know, because a lot of people don't really know the history of baseball, especially these days, because baseball is not as popular as it once was with most people, especially the younger generation. And so, like, with the reason why I had to split it up is because a lot of Negro League players obviously didn't get to play in the pros, because that's why they had to create the Negro League, because they needed their own league, because nobody would let them into Major League Baseball. And some of the greatest players in the history of baseball played in the Negro Leagues. And so, I mean, it's crazy to actually think of a lot of guys that we missed out on who could have really changed the game of baseball, never got a shot to play. But then so the reason why I split it up is because I wanted to highlight 5 Negro League players, but then I also wanted to highlight 5 barrier breakers who actually did break the color barrier along with Jackie Robinson, because Jackie Robinson wasn't the only guy. He was the impetus. He started it. But, you know, there were a lot of other guys who were trying, and it's just Jackie happened to break through. Now, it did help that Jackie Robinson was a spectacular baseball player. Hands down, one of the best baseball players of all time. Not just because he broke the color barrier, but because straight up, he was a great baseball player. So I did want to do 2 separate lists so I can highlight 10 different players who came up in this time, in this era, and who I feel definitely deserve to be highlighted. So I'm going to go ahead and start off with my top 5 Negro League players. Starting off with number 5, Buck Leonard. He was a first baseman. He played from 1934 to 1948. And one thing you're going to notice with a lot of these Negro League players is that they played for so long. Some of these guys that I'm going to be highlighting played till they were like in their mid-40s. And so, like, nowadays we think, oh my God, Tom Brady's still playing in his 40s. You know, but back in these days when baseball first started, that was kind of the norm. He played from 1934 to 1948. And he was just known as a home run hitter. He could hit the hell out of the ball. He led the league in home runs. And if he didn't lead the league in home runs, his teammate Josh Gibson ended up leading the league in home runs. So it was basically like 2 of the best hitters were on the same team. They were actually both on the Homestead Grays at one point, and it's known as one of the most historically greatest teams of all time, not just in the Negro Leagues, but in all of baseball, that they had so many great players that they are considered one of the greatest teams of all time in baseball, hands down. So Buck Leonard's number 5. Then number 4 on my top 5 Negro League players, I've got John Henry Lloyd. He was a shortstop. He played from 1907 to 1932. Once again, played forever and a day. He batted a 370. His batting average was 370 at the age of 45. Okay? Now, his entire career, he actually had a great batting average. And he was just a great hitter. And actually, he was Babe Ruth's favorite player. Babe Ruth actually had a quote where he thinks John Henry Lloyd, at that time at least, was the greatest baseball player to be playing baseball. So that's a high compliment coming from Babe Ruth. Then number 3 on my top 5 Negro League players, I have Josh Gibson. He was a catcher. He played from 1930 to 1946. And like I said, about his teammate Buck Leonard, it was either Buck Leonard led the league in home runs or Josh Gibson did. He was just known as a spectacular hitter. In 1933, his batting average was 467 and he hit 55 home runs. His lifetime batting average is a 384. By the way, on these stats that I'm giving you on the Negro League players, they might actually have more than what I'm saying, because the statistics back then, even in the regular and even in regular baseball, they didn't keep stats the same way they used to, but especially in the Negro Leagues, they didn't care half as much, obviously. But so, I mean, a lot of these guys, when I'm telling you that they hit like a 467 as a batting average at 55 home runs, there's a good possibility that they actually hit like a 500 and had like 65 home runs. So just really, it's insane to think about, especially when I read about Josh Gibson, I was like, holy shit, this guy, he was nuts. I mean, really, if you're a baseball fan, go read about Josh Gibson. This guy, if I would have known before I did my top 10 players I wish I could have seen play, I kind of feel like Josh Gibson would have made that list if I would have known who he was before I did this list. So that's number three. Then number two on my top five Negro League players, I have Satchel Paige, one of the greatest pitchers of all time. He pitched from 1927 to 1947. As a matter of fact, he's the only guy on this list who actually ended up making it to the major leagues as well. He ended up playing for the Cleveland Indians for, I think, a couple of seasons. But his he ended up with 600 wins overall, and he was just known as a fast pitcher, one of the greatest pitchers of all time. I believe I read that Joe DiMaggio said something about how he wasn't able to take one of his pitches. He just was blowing them by him. So that's high compliments and high praise. But Satchel Paige, number two on my top five list. And then number one on my top five Negro League players is Oscar Charleston. He played both center field and first base from 1915 to 1941. Basically, he was known as a five-tool player. If you don't know what that basically means you're great at everything. You're great at offense. You're great at defense. You're great in you know how to steal bases. You're just great at every single thing that goes on in the field, and that's what this dude was known for. He was also a manager at one time, too, and not just a manager. He was a player manager, meaning he played and was the manager at the exact same time at one point in his career. And some of the comparisons that he gets are to Ty Cobb, Babe Ruth, and Willie Mays. So, I mean, this guy, he was something else. His lifetime batting average was a 348, and he led the Negro Leagues in home runs and stolen bases. And he just had a phenomenal career and was a great baseball player. So my top five ended up being Buck Leonard, John Henry Lloyd, John Gibson, Satchel Paige, and Oscar Charleston. If you're a huge baseball fan, I encourage you to go take a look at what these guys did in their careers, because, and like I said, their statistics aren't even legit. So there's a great possibility that a lot of these guys did a lot more than what we're seeing. So go take a look at some of those guys. That's just five. There's actually quite a few Negro League players throughout the history of the sport who should have got their chance in the major leagues. They did not get their chance in the major leagues. It's very sad that's the way times were at that point in time. But hey, at least now baseball does highlight these players. That's why it's still called the Negro League. I know a lot of people, especially young people, they don't realize that that's what it's called. You can't erase that history, nor should you erase that history, because you're erasing the history of all these amazing, great players. So I implore you to take a look at what they did. Also, you should also take a look at these next five players that I'm going to discuss as well, who I'm calling my top five barrier breakers. And to me, these are just five guys who besides Jackie Robinson, because we all hear about Jackie Robinson, we should hear about Jackie Robinson, but these are five other guys, I believe, that we should hear about alongside Jackie Robinson as well. And so let's start it off with number five on my top five barrier breakers in Major League Baseball. I've got Hank Thompson. He was a third baseman. He was the third baseman for the St. Louis Browns and the New York Giants from 1943 to 1956. He was the first black player to play in both the AL and the NL. He's won a championship. He won a championship with the Giants. His lifetime batting average was a .267. He hit 129 home runs and had 482 RBIs. So Hank Thompson, another guy you should just go check out. He had a great baseball career and was a great baseball player. Then at number four on my top five barrier breakers in Major League Baseball, I have Larry Doby. He was a center fielder for Cleveland, the Cleveland Indians, and he played from 1942 to 1962, so that's a 20-year career. He was the second player to break the barrier right behind Jackie Robinson. I think he came up, I want to say, the week after Jackie Robinson, 2 weeks after Jackie Robinson. It was really close to when Jackie Robinson broke the barrier, the color barrier. So Larry Doby, he came into the league. He's also the one of the first ever black managers as well. He managed the Chicago White Sox. He was the second ever black coach in a black manager in baseball. He was a seven-time All-Star. He won a championship with the Cleveland Indians. And he's a two-time AL home run leader and a one-time AL RBI leader. Larry Doby, definitely a legendary player. Then number three on my top five barrier breakers, I have Monty Irvin. He played left field and right field for the New York Giants. He played from 1938 to 1956, so another guy who played a long-ass time. He won a championship with the New York Giants. He was a one-time All-Star, and he was an NL RBI leader. His lifetime batting average is a .304. He hit 137 home runs and 688 RBIs. That's what he's known for, is being a hard hitter and driving in those runs. Now, number two on my top five barrier breakers. Now, this guy, it was actually kind of hard to not put him number one, but I kind of felt like number one was too good, and he's actually a real legend, so I couldn't put him number one, but at number two, I've got Elston Howard. And when I went and looked up this guy, I was absolutely blown away at his stats, at what he did in the league. He is basically like the first black player to come in and be an absolute superstar. Like I said, Jackie Robinson was a great player, but Elston Howard, okay, so he played catcher and left field from 1948 to 1968 for the New York Yankees. He actually was the first black New York Yankee. He won an AL MVP in 1963. He won a gold glove in 1963 and 1964. He's a 12-time All-Star. Most importantly, he won six championships with the New York Yankees. His lifetime batting average is .274. He hit 167 home runs and 762 RBIs. He also was one of the first black coaches for the New York Yankees as well. After his playing career, he ended up coaching, being one of the bench coaches from 1969 to 1979 for the Yankees. And really, like I said, when I went and looked up Elston Howard, first of all, I had no idea who he was. When I first got the idea for this list, I kind of felt like I had to do something for Jackie Robinson Day because, A, it's on a Friday, doing my show on a Friday. I gotta at least talk about Jackie Robinson. I have a great amount of respect for Jackie Robinson, not just as a player, but as a human being as well. But when I read up on Elston Howard, I was like, damn, how have I not heard about this guy? But he's something else, man. That's for damn sure. I mean, it does help that he played for the Yankees, and the Yankees at this time when he played were obviously one of the powerhouse teams. But he was a huge part of this powerhouse team. I mean, you always hear about the Joe DiMaggio's, the Mickey Mantles, those kind of the Yogi Berras. But I've actually never heard the name Elston Howard, and I'm glad I went and looked him up. And I kind of feel like if you have not heard of him, you might want to go check him out because he was a damn good baseball player. And then, so number one on my top five barrier breakers, I have Ernie Banks. I couldn't put anybody above Ernie Banks. He's actually the first black player to ever get inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, and he absolutely deserved it. He played shortstop and first base for the Chicago Cubs. He was the Chicago Cubs' first black player that they ever had on their team. He played from 1953 to 1971, and he's actually considered one of the greatest players of all time, just hands down. He's he just played great, great baseball. He's a 14-time All-Star, two-time NL MVP. He won a gold glove, two-time NL home run leader and two-time NL RBI leader. And he was just one of the greatest baseball players of all time. So my list of the top five barrier breakers, I've got Hank Thompson, Larry Doby, Monty Irvin, Elston Howard, and Ernie Banks. And that's my top five barrier breakers. And to end today's show, like I said, I have a great amount of respect for Jackie Robinson. So I went ahead and we're going to end it on a Jackie Robinson quote. And it goes like this. Many people resented my impatience and honesty, but I never cared about acceptance as much as I cared about respect. Jackie Robinson. So have a great Jackie Robinson day, everybody. You know, if you don't know anything about Jackie Robinson, you don't know anything about these 10 players that I mentioned today, you should take a look at them. They were great players. They deserve to be highlighted. And, you know, they were great for baseball. It's good to know that we still were able to highlight these guys now. Even though back in the day they were treated like shit, but, hey, at least historically we recognize them and they should be recognized. So definitely go take a look at those guys. Definitely enjoy the weekend of, baseball and, enjoy the weekend of the NBA playoffs. Cause we got some good ass games. And hey, I'm looking up at the score right now. Atlanta just took the lead over Cleveland in the third quarter. They're up 77-76. So like I said, I got Atlanta in this matchup here. So yeah, just enjoy the weekend of sports. And I will talk to you fools on Monday.